Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 17th, 1998. And in the fireside building this afternoon, we have Catherine Cummings Bond. She's going to do a piece on Helen Keller today. The number is 981. Let's listen in.
The first thing I want to do is have, there's room on the floor for kids or for adults that want to sit. If you want to come on in, please. I want to begin by playing a song for you. And the song is by a woman by the name of Ann Reed. Ann Reed is a folk singer. I've never met her, but I think I'm her biggest fan. And she writes a song about heroes, which you have in your lap. We need some in the back. I think Rick needs one, and we only have 15 copies because we're having a copy machine problem here. So, what's this mean? Broken. But I want to play this song for you. This song really is the song that inspired these women. And I will tell you, as the week goes on, you'll learn a little bit more about my life and about these women. But today, I want to play this song as an introduction to heroes in our life. So, can we hit it, Ben?
Absolutely.
And will this get on the tape?
Yes.
She's from Minneapolis, by the way, as some of you are.
Harriet Tubman, Annie Sullivan, Gertrude Stein.
How did you do? Mm-hmm. How many of you knew of 30 or more of those women?
What's the total?
I think there's 50.
I counted the ones I didn't know.
Did you count?
I counted what I didn't know, but okay. I didn't count what I know. So
well, if you knew 30, I'm very impressed.
I'd say 30.
You said you knew 30? The problem is most of us don't know these amazing women. And unfortunately, in history classes still, we hear wonderful stories of heroes, of which there are many great male heroes. But we don't hear the stories of the women. So I'll tell you my absolute mission. My mission is to get these in schools more. And so I came up here to teach them to you, and maybe you have some ideas to help me get these women into schools across the United States. If you have any thoughts or dreams or connections about that, I would love to talk to you this week, and I will be around. You're doing great. I think I'm ready to begin. And Du Helen, thank you. Here are some cards with my name and address and phone number and the women that I do. And I'll begin now. I'll do Helen Keller, and then if you have any questions from children or from adults, I'd be glad to answer them as Helen Keller. First of all, let me say this. Helen Keller has long been my hero. I was in third grade, I think, when I saw the picture of her, the story of her life, and I remember vividly that story when they took the water and they pumped it over her hands, and she got it. I'll never forget that moment of transformation, that awakening, and that stayed with me for years, that image. So she had a great effect on me in my life. But I have one comment to tell you, this is a secret, that she was not blind. Helen Keller was really not blind. She had eyes to see more than most of us will ever see. My name is Helen Keller. Many have summarized my life by saying that I was doubly handicapped. But I'll tell you, if I were to tell you how I saw my life as being blessed, richly blessed. I was the firstborn to Kate and Arthur Keller on June 27, 1880, in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Now, my father was a captain in the Confederate Army, and he was 20 years older than my mother. My early childhood memories are very dark, and they are filled with deep and profound frustration that often found its way into rage in my life. You see, being both blind and deaf, I could not make sense of my life. No one could communicate to me, and the world outside me seemed to be filled with people so different than myself. I didn't understand them, and they did not understand me. I suppose if you would have met me when I was a small child, you would have thought I was a bit like a wild animal. I had developed a sense of a system of symbols for functioning in my world, and my poor parents were really at their wits' end. They let me behave like an animal, punctuated with many outbursts of anger and frustration and fits of rage, because you see, I was being held captive. I was held captive in a prison of dark silence, and the darkness and the silence were extinguishing my spirit. To illustrate this, let me tell you one story. I had a little sister, her name was Mildred, and she was just a baby. Well, sometimes when Mildred was around, my mother paid more attention to Mildred than she did to me. And one time I came into the parlor, and I wanted all of my mother's attention, and I could sense that the baby was in there. And so I felt her cradle, and I just pushed her over on the floor. She went sprawling. I could have hurt my wee baby sister, but I was so frustrated, and I wanted somehow to tell someone. I was frustrated, but I had no way to communicate. Well, my parents took me to several specialists. One important suggestion proved to be the key. They said, why don't you take Helen to Washington, D.C. and meet a great and powerful man? His name is Alexander Graham Bell. You know Bell for the invention of what?
Telephone.
The telephone. But did you know this? Alexander Graham Bell was really trying to come up with a system for children who were hard of hearing like me. That's what he set out to do in the beginning. Kids just like me, and that's how the telephone got invented. So when I was 5 years old, my father took me to Washington, D.C. to meet Dr. Bell. who had invited us to have dinner at his home. It was Alexander Graham Bell who opened the door for my bewildered parents. He encouraged my folks to write away to Boston, to the Perkins School for the Blind, and write for a suitable teacher for me, which was exactly what my parents did. They did it that night in their hotel room. The letter finally arrived back to us in Alabama. It had good news. A teacher would be sent who was, quote, exceedingly intelligent, honest, industrious, and ladylike in her mannerisms. Thank goodness for that. This person would prove to be the most important person in my life, and she became my beloved Annie Sullivan. Now, Annie was not born into a family like mine. She had no money. She was abandoned by her own parents when she was 9 years old, and she was sent to the state poorhouse, along with her little brother and sister. Think of her life. She lived with folks society rejected, alcoholics, orphans, the elderly, and the insane. Later, when we were good friends, Annie would tell me what it was like to grow up there. She told me that sometimes her playmates were rats that were lurking in the corners. Of course, she had no dolls to braid their hair or things to play with of her own. So, Annie understood what it was like to have a dark childhood, which I had felt that I had had. Although I had money, I did not. It was dark. It was in a prison for me. And Annie was really blind until she had an operation on her eyes in her teenage years and when she was in her teens. So when Annie came to work with us and my family, with me, she was 21 years of age. And I'll tell you something. I didn't like her. Not one little bit. And this is why. She was mean. She probably looked at my behavior and she was probably appalled. One breakfast meal, maybe you've seen this in pictures. One breakfast meal, I was going around the table and doing what I always did, which was feeling people's plates and seeing, oh, there's a pork sausage, that's good. And I'd feel, oh, there's some cinnamon toast. I'd either stuff it in my mouth or I'd put it in my pockets. I got to her plate, I was doing what I always had done. I felt in her plate and she went slap. Wow, where did that come from? All of a sudden there was commotion in the room. And all I knew that people were getting up and I felt some vibrations and I didn't know what was going on until I felt around. And the only person left in the room was the mean teacher, Annie Sullivan. And I got to the door, I knew where the door was to get out, and it was locked. They had locked me in there with that mean teacher. Well, I knew what to do. I threw myself onto the ground. I kicked and I screamed and I shouted and I pounded for minutes. I kept it up for about 10 minutes. That always worked in the past. But Annie, I don't know what she was doing. I think she was just sitting very calmly and coolly over here on a chair until I was finished. So she just sat there. And when I stopped, I felt around and there she was sitting in the chair. And then we got up. Well, what happened next wasn't all that pretty. The next several hours, there was a lot of communication between us. Not what she had in mind. She would put a spoon in my hand and I would hurl it across the room. She would sit me down at the table and I would throw the chair away. I had been in control of the household. And I didn't know what this was all about, this new thing that she probably thought was for my best education. I thought it wasn't. Well, in the end, I ended up seated at the table. And I ate my meal with a spoon for the first time in my life. And I even folded my napkin. We were both exhausted by that point. My mother had been watching the entire scene outside the window of the dining room. I'm sure it was agony for her to watch someone treat me the way Annie was. But my parents were so pleased that I had learned to become obedient. That was really all they wanted. They just wanted an obedient child that would look good in public. But that is not what Annie had in mind. Not at all. Well, finally, Annie said that I would have to be taken away from the house, and my mother said absolutely not. She would forbid that. And she said, well, Mrs. Keller, you keep rescuing your daughter. And if she's ever going to learn anything, she needs to get away from this place and away from your rescuing. So they ended up on a compromise, which was a little tiny cottage not far away. Let's say from here to Narnia, about that far away. It was an old little shack, and they fixed it up and repainted it and made it inhabitable. And they put me in a carriage ride and took me for a 3.5-hour ride. I thought we were going on an adventure, and I loved adventures, like all kids love adventures. We got to the little house, and we got out, and I was left there with Annie. And I felt about the same way I did in that dining room that morning. Well, Annie kept doing the silliest things. You have your hand. She kept playing this finger game with me. She would do this into my hands all the time. And I had no idea what it was that she was doing. She would just take my hands, and she would, I don't know, she would play these finger games. It felt to me like it was just a game, and she would do this all the time. I couldn't make sense of it. I had no idea what she was doing until one day you might recall. One day, my family was out on the porch, and they were watching this whole thing. I didn't even know where we were. I knew we were at the water pump, because back then we got water outside. We didn't get it from a faucet inside. We were out at a water pump. I had no idea it was a water pump my parents could see. And all of a sudden, my world turned from darkness into light. Absolutely. We were at the water pump, and teacher had my hand under the water. And in my other hand, she was spelling W-A-T-E-R. Slowly, and then rapidly. And then all of a sudden, I stood still. I stood absolutely rigid, because I felt like a misty consciousness of something forgotten, because you might remember for the first year and a half I could see before scarlet fever. And I remembered back, and something was coming true again, and I understood for the first time that this gushing, wonderful stuff coming out and water were the same thing, and that she was spelling what that was. Well, all of a sudden I got it. I knew that water was that cool, wonderful something flowing over my hand. And the living word awakened my soul. It gave me light and hope. It set me free. And then, from that moment on, I was wild. I was wild to find out. I would go and I would feel a tree, and I would say, spell it! And she would spell into my hand. And I found the dog, because the dogs had been my very good friends. Long before people understood me, the dogs were good to me. And I said, what's the dog's name? And I found my mother. What's my mother's name? And she would spell. I just went from one thing to another thing. The faucet, what was the faucet called? Now everything had a name. Now things made sense to me for the first time in my life. And it was like the curtain was lifted on my dark, confusing world. And I was so relieved and excited to make sense of my world. But once I started to learn, there was no stopping me. Everything changed for me from that time on at the water pump. Especially my countenance, which means the way my face looked. Annie said the next morning I woke up and she said I looked like a radiant fairy. Because where there used to be frustration, now there was joy. On that day I kissed Annie for the first time. Because now I understood what this silly finger game was all about. In just one month's time, I realized my whole life had been transformed, which says to you something about the power of teachers in our lives. I'm sure there are more than one or two teachers here. My beloved teacher Annie and I lived in our own cottage for a few more weeks, but that was all. Then we returned home to the house with the rest of the family. Our mission was accomplished. I was like an eager baby, and in just a few months, I learned hundreds of words. One day, teacher brought me to a nest inside a little house, and I could smell, I knew where I was. I was in the hen house, and she took out of a warm nest one of the eggs, and she told me what was going to happen. She said that I was going to feel a baby chick being born. Well, I didn't know what that meant. I had never seen a picture. I'd never known, and she put the egg into my hand, and every nerve ending in my body was on tippy-toe. And I felt all of a sudden, coming out of that egg was a baby chick. It was the most exciting moment of my life up to that point. Well, we went and saw the Piglets later that day, and I asked her, where was the
Ashland, Ashland, baby chick.
Yes. I asked her, where was the egg the baby chick came from, exactly? One day, I went racing into her room. This was very exciting, because I got to teach Annie something. I found her room, I went in, and I spelled into her hand, dog, babies, five. And then I took her out, and I took her to the shed, where I had gotten to experience five baby dogs being born, five puppies. Because the dogs trusted me and knew me so well, they let me feel the whole birth experience, and I got to show teacher something. Five babies born, puppies had just been born. It was very exciting for me to get to teach her something. Well, where there was anger and frustration, there now was utter joy in my life. There were no more tantrums, and I was completely alive, and I was so glad to be. After my education began, the world within my reach became so alive. I used to spell to my blocks and to the dogs. I sympathized with flowers whenever they had blossoms picked because I thought it must hurt them, and I would spell into their leaves that I was sorry. I hoped that they weren't hurt too much. It was years before they made me to believe that dogs could not understand me, because whenever I would trip over them, I would always stop and spell into their paws, "I'm very sorry, I hope I didn't hurt you." They told me later that they didn't understand, but I never believed them. In a few more months, I learned to write, and I wrote my first letter to my cousin, Anna. My progress seemed to amaze everyone who knew me, even those relatives who urged my parents to put me away because I was a mental defect. That's what they called me. Even they were impressed. But they never gave my teacher, who they called that Yankee girl, any of the credit. The first summer of my world with language, I was given the gift of Braille. You remember Louis Braille, who was sightless from the age of 3. He invented the system that you now see, I guess I'm told, on public buildings. Even it is written in Braille. In 1826, he came up with a system. It was not long before I had read every book that Annie had brought with her from the Blind School. Now, because teacher was writing to the head of the Perkins School about me, she wrote like you would write to a principal. She wrote and she would tell about how her progress was going. The Boston newspapers began to write stories about me. It was very funny to me because they always exaggerated stories about me. I was not a genius. I was simply a caterpillar who had been finally given my wings. But they told all these stories. And the director of the Perkins School for the Blind invited teacher to bring me along with her and come for a visit. What an opportunity for me to get to go do that. I was going to meet some other children who were just like me. They were my age, and they were also blind, and some were blind and deaf. That was going to be the most exciting day of my life. So in May, I boarded the train, and my mother and teacher got on with me and went to the Perkins School. During the exciting train trip, I sat next to Annie on the bench in the train, and she would spell into my hand everything we saw. She said there were sheep, and she would tell me about what I knew I'd seen, touched sheep. And she would tell me the whole way through. And we stopped en route in Washington, D.C., and we saw my good friend, Alexander Graham Bell. Bell devoted much of his life to helping the handicapped, and he was surprised to discover how much I could communicate. He said this about me. This is a quote. He said, "My achievement is without parallel in all the education of the deaf." Well, his comments were given to the press, and they were added to my fame. In fact, just from that one article in the paper, the president heard I was in town, and Mr. Grover Cleveland, who lives in a very large white house, asked me to come see him. So I got to go and see the president. I was very glad to meet him, and he said he was glad to meet me too. That's what Annie said. But I'll tell you the truth. When I arrived at the Perkins School, where there were other children just like me, that was the most exciting day. It's one thing to have a president fuss over you. It's another thing to meet someone your size and your age who speaks your language. And I was met at the train by a young lady who I became good friends with, and she was just my size, and she could not see or hear either. It was like going to my own country for the first time. Now, the Perkins Library was the largest collection of books for the blind in the entire United States, and I pounced on them eagerly. My teacher could hardly keep up with me with my endless requests for information. I loved my first visit to Perkins. Now, some of the writings about me made me out to be almost supernatural. The director of the Perkins School, in fact, called me the eighth wonder of the world. Even Queen Victoria of England was familiar with me by a writing she saw in a magazine by Alexander Graham Bell. And by the time I was just 12 years old, my name was familiar to people all around the world. Now, I've spoken much about my childhood. I want to tell you about the rest of my life in broad brushstrokes. It came for me to think about my college education, and I had a lot to consider. My education really was only the world filtered through my hand. Annie would tell me all about the world through this one hand, and this is how I understood. Well, I was told by Annie about one school that was particularly difficult. It was called Radcliffe. It was the most difficult school for a woman to enter, and therefore it was the most appealing to me. I entered the Cambridge School at 16 years old to prepare for my entrance exams to Radcliffe. Now, the exam to enter Radcliffe is a little bit different than the way you have it today. We would go into a room for several hours and we would write out questions. And I did mine on my Braille typewriter and they were translated. This is one question from that exam on one portion of the English. See how you would do. This is what the question was. Write a paragraph on Silas Marner, on the coming of Epi, on the death of Gabriel. Tell the story of the Merchant of Venice, showing many and what stories are interwoven into it. How would you do on that question? Well, I passed with flying colors, and I was finally admitted very reluctantly by the administration of Radcliffe in the year 1900. Now, you may find this hard to believe, but it's the truth. There was no special consideration for me and my handicaps when I was at Radcliffe. This is what I would do. I would go to class, I would sit in my desk, and I would have Annie translate as much as she could into my hand. Of course, she didn't get every word, but she got many of the words. And when she was finished translating and class was over, I would get back to my room as fast as I could, sit down at my Braille typewriter and type out what I could remember. That was how I did my college education. It was a little bit different than most people get to do it. But that was what worked for me. Also, during my college years, I was approached by the Ladies' Home Journal, a magazine that perhaps some of you remember. And I was asked to write the story of my life. I was petrified to write. I didn't think I was a good writer at all. And Annie told me that I could do it, so I believed her. I began work on the articles that later became a book. Perhaps you've seen it. It's published in over 50 languages. The book is called The Story of My Life by Helen Keller. I did earn excellent grades when I was at Radcliffe in 4 years. I was just there for 4 years. Not a bad feat for a blind and deaf young woman. I'm told today that sometimes students take longer than 4 years, even those that have sight and hearing. That's interesting for me. I've never heard of that before. My college education was very expensive, though. And finally, it was Mark Twain and Alexander Graham Bell who organized a fund to pay for most of my schooling. Although Radcliffe was very reluctant in the beginning to have me, I don't believe they regret it at this day. I was blessed to meet some of the finest people that were alive in the world. I want to tell you who they are, but before I do, I want to add something. You will hear mostly men's names because people of my day with power and influence were mostly male. And I'm hearing that that is changing, for which I'm glad. Here are the people that I had in my circle of friends. Mark Twain, Andrew Carnegie, Alexander Graham Bell, Carl Sandburg, the Rockefellers, Henry Ford, many famous actors and actresses, Albert Einstein, George Bernard Shaw, Winston Churchill, Eleanor Roosevelt was a particularly good friend, and many of the presidents of the United States. I was invited to the White House during each term of the president for the rest of my life. Now, without the help of and the encouragement of these influential and powerful people, I could never have done my work and raised the money I did for the blind and the deaf. I am greatly indebted to these wise and these kind people. But none of them, not any of those wealthy and powerful people, touched my life like my beloved Annie Sullivan. Can you imagine how much energy it took to sit next to me my entire life and spell the world into my hand? I can't imagine. I was hungry for information, and she would spell endlessly into the night, tell me about what was going on. But she herself was very sick, and she had to receive many operations on her own eyes so she could see just barely. Unquestionably, the most painful episodes of my life were the times when Annie was ill. My beloved Annie died at the age of 70 in 1936. Her last words were these. She said, "I wanted to be loved. I was lonesome, and then Helen came into my life. I wanted her to love me, and I loved her. Thank God I gave up my life that Helen might live. God help her to live without me when I go." It was hard for me to understand how two people could love each other more and help each other in life as much as Annie and me. You see, the light and the music and the glory of life had been withdrawn. It was hard for me to go on, but I did keep going. There was a woman named Polly Thompson. She'd been working with Annie and me as a secretary for years, and she now became my traveling companion, helping me to continue my life of writing and speaking and fundraising for the blind and the deaf. Let me tell you one thing that was very disappointing in my life. One thing I always wanted to do was to become a great speaker. Despite enormous effort and the help of many others, I never learned to speak very clearly. In fact, Thomas Edison, whom I met, told me that when I spoke, it sounded like steam exploding. Just steam exploding. And the only people who could understand me were the children. They understood what I was saying when the adults didn't get it at all. Although I could not speak well, that certainly did not stop me. I had many speaking tours all over the world. The most successful ones were ones when Annie would come with me and I would speak for a few moments until people couldn't tolerate it any longer, and then Annie would get up and speak. As always, we were an unbeatable team. Let me tell you about my faith. My faith was very important. It was at the center of who I was. Annie said she had no religion at all, but by the end, after our amazing friendship, I think she believed in God. My faith in God was very deep and pervasive in all of my life. When I was 16, I was introduced to Swedenborg, who is a Swedish mystic, who taught me this. It's something that I bet most of you believe. But in essence, Swedenborg is about the essence of God is love, wisdom, and strength. The essence of God is love, wisdom, and strength. You see, the spiritual world offered no difficulty for one who is blind and deaf, because nearly everything in the natural world is as vague and remote from my senses as spiritual things are to your senses. So the spiritual world made complete sense to me. I cannot even imagine my life without faith. It was so important to who I was. I could as easily fancy a body working without a heart. Faith, my faith in God was so important. My faith in God enabled, emboldened, and empowered me to live the life that I did. Now, over my lifetime, I did a few amazing things. I lived a very happy and abundant life. People said that there was a joy in my face that they rarely saw. There was something about my eyes. Even though I couldn't see, there was a sparkle, people said, that they seldom encountered. I did love life, and I loved people. I loved visiting people even in the hospital. Those are some of my favorite times, visiting folks in the hospital during my long and wonderful life. I continued to be mentally alert well into my 80s. I read my favorite books every day, which were the Bible and poetry and philosophy. I always had at least one dog, which was a love of mine that began in my dark childhood when people did not understand me. And every day I would stroll in the garden if it was at all warm, and I would stroke the flowers that Annie had taught me about when I had first learned the language and speech. That was some 80 years ago in Tuscumbia, Alabama. I died quietly on June 1st, 1968, at the age of 88, and my ashes were placed alongside Annie Sullivan's. In my life, I had learned to swim. I learned to ride a bicycle, which wasn't done much then, and a horse. I have written several books. I met world leaders and lovely common folk. Once, I flew in the open cockpit of an airplane. I never shrank from danger. I said, life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. I said, life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. I enjoyed meeting you today. I hope that my sharing my story with you will help you to do your life work. Thank you. And do you have any questions for Helen Keller? Yes. Do we have a question? No. Okay. When I do it for whole schools, 100 hands come up. I mean, they're just so enraptured. They get so excited. And they always, the teacher or the principal has to cut it off. He says, we have no more time. The kids are saying, oh, no! They go to apoplexy or something.
Did you speak clearly when you learned to talk?
No.
No. Guttural?
It was like steam exploding. Mm-hmm. It was lots of air. Mm-hmm. I was very hard to understand. Annie understood me, and some children understood me, but and Polly did in the end, but mm-hmm. I was never easy to understand at all. No, not even from the children, no questions? Sometimes people ask me if I ever fell in love, and I did, and I was ready to be married. I took my husband home to, my parents found out about it when they read about marriage licenses in the paper. So I took my husband, or my fiance, home to meet my parents. And they thought that my fiancé was trying to exploit my fame, and at that time, a little bit of money. And so they forbid me to be married, and he left my home, and I never saw him again. And that was a deep sadness for me in my life.
How did that impact your relationship with your parents?
Well, it did impact it for sure. But. My parents had been through so much with me, particularly as a little child. A lot of us work through this the rest of our lives, how to please our parents, years of therapy, and yet live our own lives. And I think I was, at that point, still too much wanting to please them. Yes?
Did you encounter many people who could do the tactile signing, or was it mostly just Annie?
When I was around places like the blind school, and in those circles, I would run into people, but usually it was not. I was usually a spectacle. You'll see these pictures. What I would love to do is when I would meet people, I would ask them if I could please touch their faces, because that's how I really met them. Here I am touching President Dwight Eisenhower's face. Here I am touching an opera singer's face, and here I am touching Eleanor Roosevelt's face. So that for me was really getting to meet someone. Did any of you ever meet me when I was alive? Sometimes at some of my performances, I meet someone who actually met Helen Keller when I was alive. I don't see anyone here. That was pretty exciting. Any other questions?
I've never met you. I'm David.
Hi, David. Nice to meet you.
What kind of dogs do you have?
Just good old critters. Here's some pictures. This is an Irish Setter over here. In the end, I think my dog was a... I had all different kinds of dogs. I love dogs because they communicate. They were my first friends. Over here, you'll want to see this picture of me. Annie made one of our classrooms up in a tree, an apple tree. And there were two chairs in this tree, and she would take me outside and teach me in the tree. It didn't matter because, you know, I didn't need any audiovisual, but it just sat, talked to me in the tree. You'll want to come and see the pictures of me. Here I am at my Braille typewriter at Radcliffe and what that was like. And here I am with Charlie Chaplin and one of my dogs. Here's a boxer dog with me. And here's a picture of Annie and myself, one of the portraits taken of us. By the way, I always dressed up. I had quite a wardrobe because I said that although I realized you could not see me, I knew although I could not see, I said I knew all the eyes would be on me. So I made sure that I looked as my very best. I often also wore our big gardenias here because the sense of smell was one of my greatest senses, and I love that. Yes?
I have heard that she could tell the difference in color between roses by their smell. And I was wondering if you know of other things that she could have done with her smell that, or other senses that we can't or don't.
My sense of touch is much keener than yours because I had to depend so much on it, and my sense of smell was as well. If you closed your eyes and spent time with five roses, you could do the same thing. It isn't all that remarkable. But my senses that I did have, like touch and smell, were much greater than yours. So yeah, that was true. Yes?
When communicating with Annie Sullivan and others, did you just finger spell like they did to you, or did you actually sign with ASL?
Back then it was more finger spelling, and that's what I first learned. Because signing, you see, didn't make sense to me. I couldn't see someone sign. When you go some places, you might have a signer, but that never made sense to me. Just spelling in the hand made more sense to me, because that's all I knew.
Did you tap out the A's of it? How did that work?
You mean in the hand? Every letter, well, Annie and I had our own kind of system. She wouldn't spell out every word. There were signs for different things. But when we didn't know someone's name or something, then she would spell that into me. Yeah. We got pretty good at communication. She would just do something, and we communicated in ways that most people that spend a lifetime that closely together do communicate. Yes?
After Annie died, who interpreted the role for her?
Polly Thompson, this woman, but it was never the same. You know, she was like my life partner. We had spent so much time together. At one point, Annie was married. She and her husband, he was a college professor. Back then, divorce wasn't done, but they just kind of stopped living together and being together. So Annie and I were the team. We did everything. And so when she was gone, it was like someone turned the light switch off emotionally for me. It was very difficult. But I had kind of a mission. And so I was kept on my mission. Yes?
So Annie's, in effect, you were her only pupil.
I mean, right.
She didn't ever take on?
No. No, she didn't. And you know, I have to say, very self-sacrificing of Annie. You know, who was the miracle worker? It wasn't me. It was Annie. Annie was the miracle worker. I was her student, but she was the one who did it all. And she is not very famous, but she was the teacher. She was the one that I think it was much harder to live Annie's life than my life, certainly as a child. And then to interpret the world, the energy, the incessant questions I had for her, She was an amazing woman, and she'd get far more credit than I get. It's my belief on that. Yes?
Did she have much training to do what she did with you from the school? It was mostly intuitive. You wouldn't
encounter. Annie was utterly amazing. She was just 21. She was raised in a poorhouse playing with rats. And then she went to the Perkins School, and she was a student needed a job. She wasn't seen as a prodigy by any means. She was just a student needed a job, and she was sent out to me because I think she was paid $25 a month to help me live with my, and she earned, I was so horrible, she earned every single penny of that. Black and blue places, if I could have seen what I did to her body in the beginning, is embarrassing to me. But, yeah. Yes?
What was it that your parents did?
What did my parents do? Mm-hmm. He was a retired military, I mean, professionally. Mm-hmm. My mother did not work. Women did not work. And my father was retired military, and we had a farm.
Did they Alexander Graham Bell?
Well, they did not know Alexander Graham Bell. And I have to say, to Alexander Graham Bell's credit, he didn't know. We were not famous. We were people of some means, but we were not famous people. And he just heard about us and invited us to his home. It says to me a lot about when a common person asks something of you, do it, you don't know who they are. So Alexander Graham Bell was very good to me and my family. Yes?
How did you get enough books to study in college?
Well, isn't Radcliffe in Boston?
Yes.
Is that remember right there?
Yes.
Well, it was near the Perkins School for the Blind. I didn't have nearly, you're a college professor, I didn't have the books other students had, but I had enough, and they would make up for it by speaking to Annie and me after class, a lot of special tutorials, and Annie telling me those things. It was difficult, because you know, back then Braille books were done by hand and the punching system. Yes.
Did Annie write anything, or are there books about her exclusively?
Yes, there are books about Annie. She had no time to write. We did some writing. Actually, there was a part of our life that was very radical, and most of the lovely histories about my life are void of that section. It was the last section when I became a socialist and a radical, and that wasn't as pretty and as didn't help raise as much money. But Anne and Annie wrote some. They're quite obscure. But with her college professor husband, the three of us did some writing. And we did it for making money so we could live. We barely had enough to live. And in the end, when I finally died, I had very little money. Just had enough to live. So Annie did some writing, but she should have done more.
Because
I don't want to take more of your time. You've been an incredible audience from ages... I don't know. How old are you, little one?
How old are you?
You are five. You are so good, Grandpa. Good job. For ages five, tell people beyond five. thank you so much. Tomorrow you will get to meet Sojourner Truth, who is a black slave woman, an amazing preacher, and her story will give you goose pimples and tears. So tomorrow, look forward to seeing you. Thank you for coming today.